This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. All right, let's start off with a personal question. This one is, I guess it's addressed to me. You come all the way to America to make a life for yourself and settle in California. What objective criteria defined that decision? Well, I didn't really come to settle in California. My decision was to leave Israel, where I was born and raised and where I served in the military and got my undergraduate degree, to leave Israel to come to America. And the objective criteria at the time was, where is the best place to live? Where is the place where I thought I could make the most of my life, where I could live the best, happiest, most successful life possible? Where did I want to raise my kids? And the criteria there involve, where is it relatively free? Where is the country, if you were big enough, with enough opportunities to do interesting and fun things in terms of productivity? You know, things like weather have to do with it. There are a lot of criteria in terms of what, objectively, do you think is good for you and what will enhance your life? Some of that is generalizable, like which countries are freest. But, you know, today, for example, Singapore is economically freer than the United States. But I don't want to live in a tiny little city state in Asia for a variety of other reasons, weather, culture, aesthetic opportunities, miscellaneous. So you have to take all those different things into account and choose a place at – you know, when I was making this decision in the mid-1980s, it was kind of obvious that the place in the world to come to was the United States of America. Unfortunately, given where we are today, I'm just not sure if it's as obvious today as it was back then. So this is a political question. So first let me say, nothing I say should be interpreted as an endorsement of a candidate. I don't endorse candidates. As a CEO of a 501c3, I'm not allowed to endorse candidates, so this is more of a theoretical discussion of a candidate. So this question is about Ted Cruz, and the idea is, since objectivists vote on a candidate's basic philosophical principle or political principles, and not necessarily on the whole philosophy of the candidate, so basic political principles, not necessarily on the whole philosophy of the candidate, do you think, as I do, Senator Ted Cruz would be the closest to this concept and worthy of my vote? If not, what and where would be your objections? Well, I think my objections, I don't know. And again, I'm not going to rank the candidates here. But where would be my objections? And these are big objections. These are not trivial objections. My main objection to Ted Cruz would be around religion and the extent to which he has elevated and made it a big deal in his campaign. Whether he personally, how religious he is personally or not, is less relevant. He has made religion a centerpiece of his campaign, whether it's the statement that every good president starts his day out on his knees praying, or whether it's the fact that he says repeatedly in every interview that one of the first things he'll do on the first day as president is launch a criminal investigation of Planned Parenthood, clearly in an effort to ultimately ban abortion. His whole discussion of religious freedom, as if there's such a thing as religious freedom, independent of other intellectual freedoms, of other individual freedoms. Aren't we all just free? Free to think what we want, you know, act in the pursuit of our values as we see fit, as long as we're not hurting other people. Suddenly, if you're religious, you have special freedoms. That's not what the founders meant. We all have intellectual freedom to believe what we want to believe and to act on those beliefs. Again, as long as you're not violating other people's rights. There's nothing special about Christianity or Judaism or Islam or any other religion. This is about ideas. And the fact that Ted Cruz is making such a big deal out of religious freedom, which has become, by the way, a code word for anti-gay marriage, for anti-abortion, for the whole religious agenda. So that's a huge objection. And then the very fact that he is trying to outflank Donald Trump on immigration in terms of becoming even tougher than Donald Trump, even on things that you would think are uncontroversial, like H-1Bs, which I don't see who logically from an economic or moral perspective could object to these. The fact that Ted Cruz objects to them. So there's a series of these issues. And then add to that the fact that he is not confronting Donald Trump on issues related to, for example, trade. When Donald Trump is espousing such nonsense, such fallacies, such arguments that on their face are wrong, and the fact that Ted Cruz is not even mentioning that he disagrees or that this is wrong, again, I think in a pragmatic attempt to get Trump donors to support him, I can't get excited about Ted Cruz. Sorry, you know, maybe he's the best candidate of all of them. On certain issues, certainly he is. But I can't get excited about him, and I'm not going to support him, and I'm not going to go out of my way to support him because these are big, big caveats. These are big, big problems. If Ted Cruz was secular, we would be having a completely different discussion. So this is another political question about Donald Trump and how he fits in to the whole issue of the DIM hypothesis. So those of you who haven't, you should read Dr. Peacock's book, The DIM Hypothesis. And the question is here, how does he fit? He's not an M2, he's not a D2, what is he? Because those of you who've read it will know that Dr. Peacock predicts that within 40 years we're likely to fall under an authoritarian rule of an M2. An M2 is an integrator, an absolutist integrator, somebody who integrates around a false idea. And Peacock predicts that that false idea would be religion, and that that if we ever have a dictatorship in the United States, it would be a religious dictatorship of left or right, but where the integrating factor is religion. So how does Donald Trump fit into that prediction? Now, first, let me say, I'm no expert on DIM. That is very much Dr. Peacock's field. But I said this because I've thought about this, because I've wondered, because clearly he is not an M2. He's not a religious authoritarian. So in my view, Donald Trump is a D. He's disintegrated. D stands for disintegration. M stands for misintegration. You're integrating around something wrong. D is disintegrating, fragmented, unintegrated. And Donald Trump is a disintegrator. He's a pragmatist. And he's not a D2 because I don't think he's a nihilist in the sense that somebody like Elizabeth Warren is a nihilist. I think he's just a D1. He's disintegrated. But he's an authoritarian. So I think he's part of this transition to an M2. I think that he, if he got elected, would prep, if you will, the American people to accept an authoritarian figure. And he will pave the way for somebody who is an M2, who does have a clear vision, who does have a clear philosophy, who does have a clear idea of what he wants. Trump just wants power. That's all he's about is power. Whereas M2s have a philosophical, ideological, committed agenda. It paves the way for those people because they can see what can be done. But what the Trump candidacy really shows is the willingness of the American people to accept an authoritarian figure, the willingness of the American people to be pandered to, the willingness of the American people to be seduced by emotion of fear, the willingness of the American people to accept economic garbage as if it's economic truth, and again, to use that as fear-mongering. And you can imagine some young potential fascist in the corner somewhere in the United States who has a clear idea of what he wants, studying Donald Trump and seeing what works and what doesn't. And 20, 30 years from now, we will see it in action. Donald Trump couldn't get away with it for a variety of reasons, primarily because he doesn't have an ideology. But he is paving the way and is showing that the American people are ready for it. And that's the thing about Donald Trump that's most scary is not Donald Trump. He is what he is. It's that people love him. It's that people respond to him. And that's what needs to be diagnosed. That's what needs to be examined. That's what needs to be understood. And that's what needs to be feared. It's kind of an interesting question I hadn't thought of. So given today's philosophical culture, is it individually advisable to get behind science of genetic alterations? If we can't get freedom right, what is the intellectual community doing to my food and medicine? So I take this as to say, given how corrupt everything is out there, isn't science going to be used against us ultimately? Now, I'm not sure what that's the question, because it could be that the question is saying, given that I can't trust the politicians, why should I trust scientists and businessmen to produce food and medicine that are good for me? Well, I think the answer to the second one is because there's a market for it. And if the food and medicine are clearly not good for you, these companies are going to lose money. And they're going to tank. And I would also say that scientists and businessmen are not as philosophically driven. Certainly, I know no scientists and no businessmen who are nihilists. The very function of science and business is kind of anti-nihilistic. And those who are successful at it, as far as I know, I don't know of any nihilists there. Whereas politicians, philosophers, academics, intellectuals, there are many, many of them are nihilists, and I don't trust them one iota with power. But what about the idea of shouldn't we withdraw support from science because it might be used for ill? And here I would say, no, you can't. And the reason is that our only defense for freedom, our only defense against the power-lusting, nihilistic, you know, political class is reason, is to advocate for reason, to, you know, articulate the case for reason. And what is the symbol of reason? What is the representative of reason? What? That's science. We have to be unequivocally pro-science. Now, if there's bad science out there, we should point it out. If science is being used for bad aims, we should point it out. But we should be unequivocally pro-science. There would be no America today. There would be no political freedom in the world today if not for the scientific revolution. It is the scientific revolution that enabled the Enlightenment. It is the Enlightenment that made America possible. Science is at the heart of what, you know, one of the problems today is that Americans have no science education, have no concept of science, and don't understand science. And yet science, when you learn science, you learn to think. When you learn science, you learn how human reason can explain the world. No wonder so many people are attracted to faith of one kind or another, whether it's religious faith or environmentalist faith or, you know, ethnic faith or whatever. Emotion and faith are on the rise. Reason is on decline. And to a large extent, that's because we don't teach science and we show no respect for science. So I think as objectivists, we have to be on the front lines of defending science qua science.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peakoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.